Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The Cabinet is meeting this morning. That's despite the Dáil not sitting this week. They're expected to hear about a state plan to pay €1.5 million to the European Union in lieu of housing asylum seekers, and about budget pressures in the Department of Health. Now, Louise Byrne is the political correspondent with the Irish Mirror, and she joins me now on the line. Louise, good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning. Can you tell me, first of all, about the financial contribution that Ministers Helen McEntee and Roderick O'Gorman are looking for approval for? This is the €1.5 million.
Good morning, Claire. Yes, so Ireland had agreed at an EU level last summer to take part in what's called the Voluntary Solidarity Mechanism. And this was to stop a large number of international protection seekers arriving in Mediterranean countries. So what countries could do is that they could either agree to make a financial contribution or they could agree to take in international protection seekers. So what Ireland had agreed to do was take in 350 asylum seekers. Now, I think we all know the trouble that we have had sourcing accommodation for international protection seekers. Last night, there was nearly 120 people without anywhere to go. So I think Minister O'Gorman and Minister McEntee have recognised that Ireland and its accommodation is under severe pressure. So they have asked, or they will be asking Cabinet rather, to agree instead of taking those 350 international protection seekers, that they will make a financial contribution of €1.5 million to the EU instead.
Okay, and as an indication of the pressure that the system is under, I see reports again today about these so-called flotels, that they're about to be finalised now, so that's moving ahead.
Yeah, and I think this is something we've been hearing about for a long time. We've heard that they were originally suggested, and then it was said, they were suggested that it couldn't happen. But I think there's been a real push on these over the last couple of weeks as the situation has gotten worse. So Minister O'Gorman, in a parliamentary question response to People Before Profits, Paul Murphy, he confirmed that the tenders will be put out very soon to try and find someone to make these flotels and to provide them. And it's hoped that they'll provide about 1,500 beds. So I think, you know, we are really struggling. So I think any beds would be welcome, and 1,500, it would appear, would make a massive difference to the system.
Now, I also want to ask you about this update that we're expecting from the Minister for Health today. Well, it's happening at Cabinet, at that meeting this morning. So he's going to tell his Cabinet colleagues about the overspend at his department, and it's significant.
Yeah, so Minister Donnelly is bringing an expenditure report both for the last 3 months of 2022 and the first 3 months of 2023. We don't exactly know what this overspend is, but there is an overspend that we do know for the first 3 months of the year, and that's being put down to things like a higher demand for emergency departments, a higher demand for inpatient and outpatient attendances. And we do know that this is not the first time there's been an overspend in the Department of Health. The Business Post reported last year that there had been letters back and forth between Public Expenditure Minister at the time, Michael McGrath, and Minister Donnelly expressing concern about this overspend. And we know that in November, Minister Donnelly had to seek an additional €1.4 billion again for overspending that was related to COVID-19. But we seem to be moving away from COVID overspending to more kind of routine overspending. So I think the real question is what's going to be done to deal with that. There's been suggestions that the HSC and the department will introduce a temporary pause on senior management and admin grade recruitment. The real question is, can you afford to do that at the moment? We already know that there's a severe issue with resources in the Department of Health and in the health service. We heard Minister Michael McGrath on Morning Ireland this morning saying that while he wasn't going to micromanage departments, a temporary pause on recruitment wouldn't necessarily be his first choice of trying to deal with this issue. So you would imagine that the current Public Expenditure Minister, Pascal Donoghue, will be speaking to Stephen Donnelly about this over the coming weeks and months.
Louise, thank you. Louise Byrne, political correspondent with the Irish Mirror. Well, I'm also joined in the studio now by Chief Commissioner with the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission, Sinead Gibney. Sinead, you're very welcome. Thank you for being here. Now, Louise was just telling us today about Cabinet being asked to consider this payment of €1.5 million in lieu of taking in 350 asylum seekers. Is that the right approach? Does it signify how serious the accommodation issue is here?
Well, I think it does signify the seriousness of the accommodation challenges that we're facing. But I do think it's very important that people understand that this is a very specific scheme that Ireland is accessing through this mechanism. It's the voluntary solidarity mechanism, as we heard from Louise. And it was essentially set up to acknowledge that countries on the border of the Mediterranean Sea accept a lot more international protection applicants than the rest of the European member states. And that we should have a mechanism in place whereby we have a follow-up. So people are sent on to those countries. And this is just in the situation where countries can't do that, that they offer a monetary compensation instead. It's not yet a year in operation. It needs to be reviewed. There has been some criticism of it overall as a programme. So we really need to understand so far, you know, how it's working overall, rather than, I would say, comment on Ireland's application alone. But the other thing that I would say is that this simply underlies the failure of Ireland to build a permanent international protection system. If we can't deal with 350, when we're talking about the numbers that we are talking about at the moment, that this just tells me that we do not have the system in place to deal with these numbers. And that's what we've been urging all along, is that Ireland invests in building a built-for-purpose, future-proofed international protection system that acknowledges the reality of the world that we now live in, where war, flux, crisis are a constant feature of our globe, and that the movement of people is not going to change.
Well, instead of that, we're getting flotels.
Exactly. And again, as we heard from Louise, this is something that's potentially going to be brought to Cabinet. It's something that has been repeatedly mentioned over the last number of decades. So essentially, we will view it along with any other potential policy that the government seeks to implement to deal with international protection. But it points again to the erosion of standards. You know, the flotels, tents, all of these constant crisis response measures, they are, in my view, they are pouring money into a non-permanent system instead of facing the reality and building a permanent infrastructure to deal with this.
Well, you could understand maybe using solutions like that if something else was happening in the background. Are you saying you don't see any indication that there is a permanent system being built?
No, we don't. And I mean, the direct provision was set up, the system was set up nearly 25 years ago, and it's still in place. It was finally acknowledged by the government that it needs to be overhauled. And then, of course, circumstances in the last 2 years have meant that that is no longer even relevant, that we have to deal with much different patterns of movement and much different, much larger numbers of people. So no, I don't think there ever has been a real commitment to deal with this in a long-term planning way, and with the full recognition that this is not just a charitable model that we need to pursue, and something that probably historically, culturally, we are more associated with in Ireland, this kind of culture of charity, which although is positive, it fails to recognise the rights-based world that we live in, where people have a right to seek international protection and they have a right to have their basic needs met while they do so. And we didn't just sign up to these. We created the system of international rights standards that we are now a part of. So we cannot just simply fail to acknowledge them then when people arrive here.
You're writing in the Irish Times today, and I was struck by your closing line: the time is running out to get this right. We will all pay the price for getting it wrong, and we'll be on the wrong side of history. Why is time running out? What are you fearful of?
I'm fearful of the failure to deal with this in the reality that we have and the numbers that we're dealing with. So if we continue as a state to look at this as a crisis that we have to deal with on a momentary basis and build in these temporary solutions, what we're failing to do is realise that this is a movement of people that's not going to stop, that we have to deal with it. And I also think what that means is We're failing to acknowledge that this is a two-way system as well. So, for example, the situation for international protection applicants has moved on in the last few years. They can now access work, education, bank accounts, driving licences. So they're not just coming here looking to languish in direct provision system, which is what they previously were doing. They want to participate in society. This is a two-way street. There's strong OECD evidence to prove that states will benefit from the introduction of people through international protection. There may be an outlay at the start, but that evens out, and not only evens out, but benefits countries in terms of the labour market.
But are your fears based around civil unrest, protests, like we have seen in some towns around the country when people are moved in who are seeking protection?
Absolutely. That's a huge part of it. And I think what we're seeing with the dual system, certainly, that we have here, where the temporary protection directive system, whereby Ukrainians are arriving here and are able to participate in society immediately, is very different to the experience of international protection applicants who, at the worst end, are simply not even getting a bed. That what that's saying is that the government and the state has a very different response to those groups, and I think that is problematic. And it also feeds into this constant narrative about it being a crisis response and not something that we have to deal with permanently. And I think what that can do is create an environment in which fear and resentment can be exploited, and certain minorities in our community can do so to sow that resentment.
So are you saying that everybody who comes here should be treated as the Ukrainians are under the Temporary Protection Directive?
Absolutely. There's no reason why we can't design an international protection system which aspires to and goes beyond the minimum standards that we have signed up to. So in 2018, we brought into law the European Receptions Directive, and we're not at the moment even meeting those basic standards, but we don't have to stop at meeting the basic standards. We should be aspiring to, I believe, a system which reflects the values of our society, a society that has, and a community that has, a huge diaspora that understands the experience of migration and emigration and immigration. And what we need to have is a system whereby people can come here, where vulnerabilities are identified, where trauma is informing how we bring people in, and whereby people are given the services they need to integrate and participate well in our society.
And in terms of what the infrastructure, the physical infrastructure, might look like with this permanent system, where would these people stay initially when they come to Ireland in an ideal world?
In an ideal world, I mean, I think the design of the international protection system is the job of the government. I do think there were some really important visions set out in the Catherine Day white paper. And I think what we need to see is the staggering of accommodation. So you have reception centres where people arrive, where they can be assessed, and then they're moved into, as they progress within their journey within the state, into the appropriate structures. We need to have, for example, gender-specific reception centres where people who have been experienced traffic or gender-based violence don't have to deal with an international or a direct provision system which fails to recognise that. So it has to be cognizant of the experience of people who are fleeing war and who have experienced trauma, and provide for them a positive story. And I think what it would do ultimately is it would shift us from what is a constant crisis story, a constant issue that we have to solve, into recognising that this is a reality in our globe, that this can be a benefit to our country if we do it right, and it can be a good news story ultimately.
Sinead, thank you for coming in today. Sinead Gibney is the Chief Commissioner of the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission. Coming up after the break, childcare workers say they need higher pay, but can childcare services afford it?
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.